Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. As usual, I'm your host, Cody. Well, we are continuing the month of December with our dark comedy Christmas movies. And as I said before, we are going to be talking about National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. This is a 1989 American Christmas comedy. This was produced and written by John Hughes. For the folks who don't know who John Hughes is, he was died before way too early of his in his career, but he is the creator of Home Alone, 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, Weird Science, Pretty in Pink, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I mean, a bunch of classic 80s movies. He wrote he wrote a bunch of the National Lampoon movies too. He wrote Vacation. He wrote, obviously, Christmas Vacation, European Vacation. He wrote I think it was one more too, right? I mean, it was all of the National Lampoon movies. Anyhow, he also he, amongst other things that that John Hughes wrote, he helped basically create a lot of the classic, I don't want to say raunchy, but adult humor movies. Of the ones I've already mentioned, those ones, you have The Great Outdoors, you have Uncle Buck, Career Opportunities, one of my favorite movies, Dutch. He wrote Curly Sue. He did a bunch of Disney movies, crazy amount of Disney movies. Wrote some TV shows too, but not a whole lot. That's about it, I believe. Yeah, that's it for John Hughes. John Hughes is an amazing guy. Wrote a bunch of stuff. So Christmas Vacation stars, well, quite a few people. We have Chevy Chase in the main role as Clark Griswold Jr., or Sparky. You have Beverly D'Angelo, who plays his wife Ellen. You have his daughter, played by Juliette Lewis, that's Audrey. You have Johnny Galecki playing his son Russ, who has actually had many faces. John Galecki's being my favorite, if not second favorite, because of Vegas Vacation. You have Dennis Quaid, Randy Quaid as Cousin Eddie. You have William Hickey as Uncle Lewis, and a bunch of other people in there too. Louis Dreyfus, I can't talk apparently, actually plays the neighbor, who is not a big fan of the Griswolds in general. She gets her own comeuppance, as they say. Yeah, that's it for the cast I'm going to talk about. The movie itself, one of the greatest Christmas movies, one of the greatest Christmas comedy movies, one of the greatest comedy movies ever, as well as a rip-roaring good time, if you ask me. So the premise is this. With Christmas only a few weeks away, Chicago resident Clark Griswold decides it's time to get his Christmas tree. So he gathers his wife Ellen, daughter Audrey, and son Rusty, and they drive out to the country where he's going to pick the best tree possible, and they grab a huge one. This is how the movie sets up. So, realizing too late that they didn't bring any tools to cut the tree down, they are forced to uproot it instead. Before driving home, the tree scrapes the roof of the car. And then all sorts of crazy shit happens. The tree's too big for the house. There's a squirrel living in it that attacks somebody. I mean, it's fantastic. Then there's the Christmas lights scene as well, where he decides to basically cover his entire house with 25,000 twinkling lights, which he then falls off a ladder. He electrocutes himself. I mean, it's just ridiculous of what he does with this thing. Soon after that, his cousin Eddie shows up in their Winnebago with his entire family. They are unannounced, by the way. They do not say that they're coming through. You have so Eddie, his wife, their children Rocky and Ruby Sue, and their Rottweiler Snots. By the way, greatest name for a dog because it fits so well. Eddie has one of the best scenes in this movie, but also just in comedy movies ever. Randy Quaid plays it amazingly. One morning, he's seen in his boxers with a coat and a hat on, and he proceeds to empty his the RV's shitter into the sewer out in front of Clark's house, and he's seen, and he raises his hand, which I believe he's smoking a cigar, or smoking a cigarette, I can't remember, maybe he's drinking something, and he says, "Shitter's full," and it's fantastic. One of the greatest lines ever. There's so many great scenes in this movie, it's ridiculous. There's the sledding scene where Clark waxes up a metal sled and shoots down a hill and is just ridiculous. There's the turkey carving scene where the turkey looks great, and as soon as they cut in, it bursts open, and it's basically just jerky because the inside has been cooked so overdone that it's become nothing but air. You have the daydream scene of the pool with the girl he sees from the car ride out to the Christmas tree. See what else. You have Eddie kidnapping Clark's boss because he stiffs him on the bonus check for the holiday. That's a whole fun scene. Just the family in general. There's the Jell-O mold with actual mold on it. There's the Christmas presents where there's a cat scene that gets electrocuted underneath a chair. It's so funny. There's so many great scenes in this movie. It's just so amazingly hilarious. Yeah, man, it's just so much fun. I can't even, there's so many, so many funny parts of this movie that it's hard for me to even, I forgot Brian Doyle Murray's in this. Bill Murray's brother is in this. He plays Frank, who is Clark's boss, who gets kidnapped by Eddie. But yeah, I mean, it's just, there's the attic scene where he's in the attic watching old movies, because he gets stuck up there wearing a bunch of different coats and shit, while the family goes out shopping. They leave him there, and he gets stuck up there by accident. Everything with the relatives, his aunt, his uncle Lewis, played by William Hickey, and his aunt Bethany, played by Mae Questel, who are super old, and they're hilarious. Like I said, you have the neighbors with Nicholas Guest as Todd Chester and Julia Louis-Dreyfus as Margot. Perfectly, Todd and Margot is a perfectly named for these yuppie fucks who live next door. John Randolph plays Clark W. Griswold Sr. He's fantastic. Diane Ladd is his mother. Nora is fantastic. The cast is just amazing in general. Doris Roberts is oh man, it's such a good cast. But yeah, I mean, basically, it's just one of the funniest movies ever made. It's crude by all means of the imagination. It's definitely not one for the kids. I mean, kids can watch it. It's not terrible. I don't even know the rating of it, tell you the truth. I could probably tell you here in a second. It doesn't have a whole lot of bad language. PG-13, I knew it was not rated R. There's a lot of suggestive stuff in it, but it's just a fun movie in general. Not one of those sappy Christmas movies. It's just super hilarious. And if you've ever watched any John Hughes movies before, like all the ones I listed, this falls right in the realm of perfect John Hughes movie. Not directed by him this particular time, but amazing just movie in general. Like I said, the cast is phenomenal. The soundtrack is amazing. Because you have like these classic Christmas songs that are in it. It's just such a good movie. And it's so like, rewatching it just made me remember how brilliant the movie was and how amazing the cast was, and just the overall fun of the movie itself is just so amazing. There's a litany of curse words and swears and slurs that Clark uses at the end when he's ranting about his boss, which is just amazing. It's one of Chevy Chase's best. This is Clark Griswold in general is one of Chevy Chase's best roles, but arguably this is his best version of Clark Griswold from all the Vacation movies that they did. Because like I said, there was four National Lampoon's Vacation, European Vacation, Christmas Vacation, Vegas Vacation. Yeah, four. And then he reprises a role in the sort of remake reboot called Vacation, released a couple years ago, which I never watched, but because it didn't look very funny. But so there's four original ones. I think this is my favorite one, followed by European Vacation, I think, is my second favorite one. Maybe Vacation is my favorite one of those. But anyhow, that's John Hughes one we'll do in another month, which is just a shame because there's way too many John Hughes movies. Maybe we'll break them up into different categories or something. I don't know. I'll find out later. I think that's really it for Christmas Vacation. Highly recommend watching if you've never seen it. Shame on you. Hilarious in its own right. It's like watching a cartoon with the shit that goes on in it, and like the fact that like Clark should have died at least like three times in this movie alone. But fantastic movie, one of the best Christmas movies ever made. Right up there with Home Alone and A Christmas Story, if you ask me. That's a thing for another day, I guess. But National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, one of the greatest comedy Christmas movies of all time. And just one of the greatest comedies of all time, too. Little fun story about this. One of the first times... I was only 8 when this movie first came out. Don't do the math on that. But I didn't get to see it in theaters. A neighbor of ours let us borrow it. I believe it was right when it came out. Our neighbor let us borrow it on Laserdisc. My brother and I were huge into Laserdisc when we were younger because of the aspect ratio and the quality of the video was so good. By the way, if you guys don't know what Laserdisc was the precursor to DVDs. They basically were record size DVDs. They were the size of a 33 and a third record. For the people who don't know what the record is, a vinyl record. But they were able to hold the same format as they were in movie theaters, unlike VHS a lot of times, which were recropped and made for televisions. So you didn't get the widescreen, so you got more picture. And the quality of picture was pretty spectacular on them for the most part, because they mimicked what you saw in the movie theaters, which way back then, way back in when, in 1989, you didn't really go to the movies for the quality of the film for the most part. But the Laserdiscs looked amazing, and I remember we were looking at them, we're like, let's watch this one. There's a whole lot of jokes I did not get in it that I did not understand because I was 9 years old when we watched this, but still one of my favorite movies of all time, and fond memories of my brother explaining a lot of shit to me during this movie, as well as a lot of the other National Lampoon movies, which I probably shouldn't have been watching when I was younger, but you know, whatever. But yeah, that's it for Christmas Vacation. Only thing left to talk about is what I've been reading last week. So I kind of fell off reading during my so-called vacation. But a couple of things I did check out. Like I said, you guys, I was going to read the new Mark Miller comic book for issue 1 came out of Prodigy. Read it. Amazing. It's the only, there's only one drawback to this particular book that I'll give you. And the fact that I know this is going to only go 5 or 6 issues, because that's Mark's like sweet spot that he writes him in. But his first issue is essentially setting up what's going to happen in the next 5 issues or whatever, how many issues follow this. I want to say it's 6 issues because it's usually what he does. But it's like this montage of the character as he's growing up, and you see his development and what he's capable of, and you get to see a snapshot of different ages and different things he's been doing. Phenomenal book. I can't wait to read more. It upsets me, like I said, because there's so much he touches on in this first one. That and it's very similar to a lot of his other books, like Magic Order, which I really love, that came out this year. The first issue is this rapid fire. Actually, a lot of the issues of the first issue, or actually, I'm not thinking of Magic Order. Every issue, the first like 2 or 3 pages is a rapid fire sequences of different things the characters are going through. But this one, more than half the book is that, and you get to the end and the big reveal is the overall story that he's going to be, that's going to take place in the next few issues. And I just can't wait to read more, because Mark has this way of taking something and really skewing it in a fantastic way. One of the things about issue, I want to say it's issue 3 of Magic Order, is talking about the failed abortion of one of the characters. She is the daughter, half sister of the kid of the sons that are in it, but the daughter of one of the main characters, the patriarch of the family, and She was born out of wedlock to a mistress of his, and she basically, as a fetus, sensed that she was going to be aborted. So she basically moved herself to another womb to be the rest. It's one of the craziest things he's ever done, and I still think the craziest one. I do like what happens in Prodigy though, when Edison Crane finds out about this mysterious thing that the Australian government wants him to investigate, is this appearance of these transdimensional vehicles and passengers that seem to be from another dimension or a parallel universe. We don't really know yet. But when they appear, they've been appearing in random places, and one of them is a guy's chest. Basically, a guy explodes after the vehicle, which looks to be a car, basically enters our dimension or our time and expands from being microscopic to being full size and exploding this guy from the inside out. It's phenomenal. It's up there with like the reveals of Huey from The Boys, which I talked about in here. It's up there with the Magic Order. It's up there with the end of Chosen, by Mark Miller, or American Jesus, if you want to go by the later name. I mean, just phenomenal. Just one little bit about it, and it probably has nothing to do with the rest of the story, but it's just this element that he's able to throw in that is shocking as well as just amazing and fun to read about and to look at, because the art by Raphael Albuquerque in this is his best work yet, and I love Raphael Albuquerque's art from his a few things he did with Batman with Scott Snyder to his larger run with American Vampire with Scott Snyder, and this is his art is keeps getting better and better. And I haven't read it yet, but he did a with Grant Morrison. He did a study of green, or in a study of emerald, which is a Sherlock Holmes book set in a Cthulhu universe. I haven't read it yet. I bought it, but I haven't read it yet. Which I probably should read. But his art in that is phenomenal. His art in this is spectacular. And so yeah, so forth. But that's Prodigy. And as of novels wise, I just started I'm about halfway through A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is a prequel book to the Game of Thrones books, which takes place 100 years before the events of the first Ice and Fire Song of Ice and Fire book, which is called Game of Thrones. And it's about a hedge knight and his squire. Man, George R. R. Martin has this. He has an amazing way of painting scenery and stuff like that, but also just the adventures he takes you on. This is a collection of three or four novellas that he wrote about this hedge knight and his squire, Sir Duncan the Tall, and Egg. So Duncan Egg is actually what they're called. It's really fun. If you like the Game of Thrones books, the A Song of Ice and Fire books, he released two other books within that world. There's Blood and Bone? No. Let me look it up. There's A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which, like I said, is a collection of three novellas. I'm gonna get the right number. I want to say it's three novellas that he wrote. Tales of There's the Hedge Knights. Where is it? It's newer. A Knight of Seven Kingdoms is the compilation of the first three Tales of Duncan Egg. Then his other new one he wrote is a reference book in a novella collection called Fire and Blood, which is the history of the House Targaryen. And then the other novella, which I have not read yet either because I'm waiting for a collection, because I think there is another collection coming out soon, which is called The Sons of the Dragon. And actually might even be in that one if I remember maybe correctly. It's so far the tales of Duncan Egg as captured in A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. The first one took a turn I did not think was going to take, and if you know the Game of Thrones book, so Song of Ice and Fire, it has so much cool references in it, and at first I was like kind of apprehensive about reading the prequel stuff because I'm like, why don't you just get to fucking finishing these other books so I don't have to worry about it. But man, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. It came out a couple years ago as a collection of novellas, like I said, of the Tales of Duncan Egg. And it's, it's just so, his world that he builds and the characters that are in it are so good. And like I said, the lore that he builds with it is tremendous. All the Sons of the Dragon is in that one. So that's the collection. So if you want a collection of the Targaryen stories, I believe all of them are captured in Fire and Blood, which I'll talk about in a minute. Which I've not read yet, but I'll talk about in a minute. The Tales of Duncan Egg, the first one, I'm a good chunk into the second one, I think about halfway. The first one is essentially the emergence of Dunk as being a knight. He's a hedge knight for the most part. But it's his basically emergence into the world, the bigger world of knighthood and knights, and is it's so much fun. It does now have a whole lot of happenings. I'll tell you right now, most of the Game of Thrones books, or A Song of Ice and Fire books. But man, oh man, is it a ton of fun! It's the way he tells his stories, the overall just the way he does his characters, and again the three stories that are in it starts off with the Hedge Knight, it goes to the Sworn Sword. And then the third one is the Mystery Knight. But there's this lore that is built up behind Duncan the Tall, Sir Duncan the Tall, that just really, really adds to the richness and the characters of A Song of Ice and Fire. And the character of Dunk and Egg, who both have extra meaning and extra depth to their characters, is pretty spectacular. And the fact that, again, if you know the world of A Song of Ice and Fire, you hear a bunch of names you recognize, you hear a bunch of families you know of, you're getting a little more of the history of what led to certain things, and it's just so much fun. And I'll go into more of it another time. The other one I'm definitely gonna read after I read this one, because Joe says it's really good. But also, just I'm really back into that fucking the world of Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones, and it's just so much fun. So the other one is Fire and Blood. Which is a collection of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different stories. I guess they're novellas. Maybe they're not all novellas, but it's interesting because it has illustrations done by Doug Wheatley, and is the first volume. Yeah. Volume 1. And it is the history of the Targaryen family that reaches back to, I want to say they said it's like 3,000 years before the events of A Song of Ice and Fire. I can't remember. But that one's really, it sounds like it's going to be fun too. So get back into it, because as we all know, come April of next year, the television show Game of Thrones will be coming to an end with its final season. So starting in January, I'll be pushing my way through rewatching all the Game of Thrones series. I could probably do one a week right before. It doesn't matter. But starting next week, along with watching chronologically the Marvel movies, I'll be rewatching the Game of Thrones show, prepping ready for April, which is not only the release of Avengers Endgame, but also the last season of Game of Thrones. So just kind of building it up there, a lot of prep beforehand, like as I'm reading this, as well as I'm going to read Fire and Blood, and maybe go back and start reading the Game of Thrones books again, but those don't really have to do with so much of the show, but it just gives me back in that mindset of the world of A Song of Ice and Fire / Game of Thrones. So yeah, that's about it for this week's episode. Next week, come back, and we'll be talking, it'll be post-Christmas, because it'll be Christmas, it'll be the day after Christmas that the next episode comes out, but it will be about Scrooged, which, if you know the story of Scrooge, is literally, it's just a comedic take on it, starring Bill Murray, one of Bill Murray's best movies, if you ask me, but we'll go over that next week on this here podcast. Again, thanks for listening, everybody. This has been The Awesome with Cody, and as usual, let's be awesome.